Hello, good evening, and welcome to the PB Polling Matters podcast and TV show. Today we've got Lord Wood, the Labour peer and Oxford academic, who's rejoining us, and we're going to talk about three major things. We've got the London mayoral election coming up in 2 weeks' time. Obviously, we've got the referendum absolutely dominating domestic politics in the UK. And at the same time, we've got this massively interesting story evolving in the US with the New York primaries having taken place this week. So lots of good issues to get our teeth into. First of all, Stuart, welcome back.
Thank you, Mike. Pleasure to be here.
At Prime Minister's Questions times this week, Cameron launched into quite a sharp attack on the Labour candidate for London Mayor, Sadiq Khan, trying to bring up and make allegations about linking with terrorism. Is Labour worried about this?
Well, I think it's worried in the sense that it's seen this strategy before. I mean, I'm not trying to be partisan about this, but as someone who worked with Ed Miliband in the last election, we saw these kind of tactics before, and it does smell like a Linton Crosby operation. And so worried in the sense that it's been widely perceived to have worked in the past, a sense that the professionalism of the Crosby operation means they wouldn't try it so strongly and repeatedly, even taking up to the Prime Minister using that language at PMQs, unless they thought it would have an effect. So my sense is there is a legitimate concern that even though Sadiq, I think, is quite a long way ahead in the polling at this stage, that a combination of trying to depress turnout amongst some wavering groups, to try and move some waverers over using the sort of fear factor that we saw this week in PMQs, that the combination of those two things might try and get Zach back in the race. Yeah, I think there is sort of reasonable concern about that. But let's face it, the polling at the moment does look healthy for Sadiq Khan. No room for complacency on his side. But at the moment, I think he's probably the favourite.
Certainly. I think the latest betting, I think we can put that up. I mean, this was the betting this afternoon. The markets essentially rate Sadiq as an 85% chance and Zach as a 15% chance. That's a huge...
It's a huge gap. I think the dilemma in the sort of tactics that we've seen this week about raising the extremism card against Sadiq Khan, the dilemma the Sadiq Khan team has is the same dilemma we had a year ago in the Labour team, which is if you sort of profess your outrage at these things too much, it keeps the story going, it keeps the issue alive, and that portion of the population and the electorate that might actually be swayed by it is more likely to hear about it. So there's always a dilemma about calling out these things and not perpetuating the sort of animus behind them that gets the voters out.
That's the
dilemma.
It's a fascinating battle. I mean, it would be interesting to see if there's any movement at all in the next round of polls.
No, I agree. And it'd be interesting to see what other issues Zach Goldsmith tries to push, because at the moment it's been... It's not to the detriment of the candidates, but the issues themselves haven't dominated the debate so far. And it seems to be that's what the Zach Goldsmith team would quite like... that's how they'd like the campaign to be. And I wonder whether that will change in the last few days of the campaign.
Of course, voting has already started. Postal votes went out a couple of days ago.
Of course. Yeah. And of course, the Sadiq challenge is to do what Labour in the past has failed to do, the Ken Livingston campaign, of course, failed to do, which is get the Labour vote into the outer boroughs of London. And that's where a lot of the emphasis on his campaign has got to be.
Yeah, excellent. Of course, the big domestic political story, and it's going to be with us right through to the end of June, is the EU referendum.
Yeah.
And we're having a massive polls every day coming out. As you see, that it's actually starting to be looking quite good at the top. In fact, since this slide was prepared, we've also got a new Ipsos Mori poll, which has remained 10% ahead. Yeah. So those are pretty big numbers. And what I find quite significant as somebody who eats, sleeps, and does everything with polls, is that when all the polls that you're getting are going in the same direction, then you treat it seriously.
Yes.
And in fact, of the last five polls, they've all been moving towards Remain. Even the ICM online poll, that was a 3% leave lead. That's now 1% leave lead. So all of them have moved, and they've all moved about between 1% and 3%.
Yeah,
which indicates that something there going on.
I mean, there definitely seems to be a turn in the last week to 10 days.
Yeah,
and it's not just in the headline numbers. Though that's clear. If you look under underneath these headline numbers, you can see, for example, that the number of people who say that Remain is the better run campaign has gone up. The number of people who say Leave has gone down quite a lot. The percentage of people who support Remain, who would say they're definitely going to vote, has also gone up 5 points, I think. Yeah. So these underlying things, I think, are looking good for Remain. And as the issue here is whether the economy or immigration are the factors that are going to determine the vote most. And at the moment, I think the economy is leading by 5 or 6 points. As a rule of thumb, it seems to me if the economy remains the dominant issue by which people will decide how to vote, I think that's looking good for Remain. There are other factors as well, in particular turnout, that's been much debated. But that's a good proxy, I think, for the sort of health of the two camps. And at the moment, despite the sort of mud throwing on both sides that's going on, that the arrival of a welter of economic evidence backed with the government's resources seems to have made a difference.
Yeah, that was certainly the Linton-Crosby view.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had even, that they say, two battles. There's actually another battle, and that's amongst the Remain side, that one of the Remain groups that wasn't designated as the official campaign is continuing to chuck mud at them.
Is that right? Oh, yes. I haven't seen as much of that. Internecine warfare, I see.
And I think the issue is that, of course, if it had gone to the more UKIP-based body, that would have led on immigration, and that would have made it absolutely...
On the Leave side, you mean? Yeah, yes.
On the Leave side, on immigration.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether those who are on the Remain side are probably happier that they're facing Leave, which is not going to make that as big a priority.
It's an interest. I mean, in both camps, there are differences of emphasis within the camps. As you know, as you've said, on the Leave side, there's the difference between the immigration lead with immigration line and lead with economy or lead with sovereignty line. Personally, I think lead with sovereignty is one for the purists. I don't think it will really animate a lot of the vote. But on the Remain side, to be fair, I support Remain myself, but on the Remain side, I think there are also differences.
Yeah.
There's a constant refrain amongst some people to have a more idealistic, more romantic argument, to tap in particularly to mobilise younger people who are more pro-Remain, but also less likely to vote, probably, and probably less likely to be registered to vote as well. So, and then there's a sort of more hard-headed, sort of cynical side of the Remain campaign that says, no, it's hammering home the economic risk argument, that's what will win it for us. And you see these debates in the Remain team as well. So both sides have an emphasis debate within the camp going on. But I think the grooves now of the arguments on both sides are being set. I mean, I think that one of the problems for the Remain campaign is that they're pulling away in the polls quite early. Yeah. And we know that turnout is a problem for the Remain case because older voters are not only more likely to vote and are a larger proportion of the electorate, but younger people are less likely to vote if they're pro-Remain. One of the things that's probably more likely to get those people who are 50-50 about voting at all to stay at home is the sense that the referendum result is already in the bag one way or the other. And so I suspect that the Remain campaign will be happy that they are doing well in the polls, but will probably have to work very hard now to sort of suppress the complacency that might come into the perception of how the referendum's going to go.
One thing that's happening, which I monitor quite closely, is the sheer level of betting activity. And on the Betfair exchange alone, we're seeing between £500,000 and £700,000 worth of bets on the referendum being matched each day.
Wow.
And one of the theories, and it's hard to put your finger on it, but there is a suggestion that there has been a sustained effort to try to, or by somebody, whether it's officially or not, to try and push the Leave numbers up so their odds will get more complex.
Oh, I see. Complexly, I see.
But the thing is, of course, people look at that and think, oh, well, there's better value in the Remain price, so then they start betting the other way.
I see, exactly, yeah.
So it costs a lot of money to do that. But there's somebody who monitors this at Nottingham Trent University, and I'm in constant contact with him.
Interesting.
At some stage, we'll be looking at that in detail.
Exactly. I mean, I think there are other things the Remain campaign need to worry about. One is that for many people, a referendum is a kind of poll on the government of the day, and David Cameron's trust numbers have taken a bit of a battering in the last couple of weeks, particularly over the Panama Papers and the fallout from that. And that's probably, that might well hurt the Remain campaign in the sense that people who just go out to support what the government says in some broad sense, those people might be less likely to support them. I think the other interesting thing here is that the Remain campaign have gone very, very hard on the economy argument in the last week or two, and I suspect that will continue that way. I got the sense at the beginning of the campaign that David Cameron in particular wanted to make a security argument as the foremost argument for Remain. I think the atrocity in Brussels probably knocked that strategy on the head for the Remain campaign, and they've shifted to the weighting to more of an economic argument. And I think that's working for them. And so I suspect that will continue that way. But in the horrific situation where another terror attack happens in Western Europe, I think that keeping the economy is the only issue that matters may be harder for the Remain campaign.
Yeah. I mean, what was interesting when we had the Brussels attacks last month, it appeared to be reflected in the polls.
Yes.
And then that lasted about a week and a half. Now, what, you know, I think the danger is if something happens in the final few days.
Absolutely.
Anyway, thank you, Stuart. That's for the first part of the programme. We'll be returning with a look at where the American presidential race stands following the New York primary. Welcome back to the PB Polling Matters TV show and podcast. With us today we've got Lord Wood, Stuart Wood, who's a Labour peer and Oxford academic. Stuart, the second part of the show, I want to look at the where the American race stands.
Yeah.
Of course, we've just had this week the New York primary, which came out with very good results for Hillary Clinton and very good results for Donald Trump. Is Donald Trump a certainty now, do you think?
I don't think he's quite a certainty. I think he's an extremely strong favourite, but I wouldn't quite put it at certainty levels. I think personally Hillary Clinton is much, much more of a certainty. In fact, is pretty much a certainty in the Democrat race. But on the Republican side, I mean, Trump, what was so strong for Trump last night was, I mean, in a sense, he was always going to do well in New York, it's where he's from. But he has had a bad run, a few states where he got beaten, Kasich in Ohio, and then by Cruz in a couple of other states. There was a sense that the wheels might be slightly coming off the campaign. So having a not just a victory, but his biggest victory to date yesterday, I think was important for Trump. But it's and what the victory did was make it mathematically impossible for Cruz to win on the first on the delegate race. However, it's just about still possible that Kasich might help Cruz in a perverse way, because if Kasich, who does well in a lot of states where the Democrats are very strong and the Republican vote tends to be more moderate, if Kasich can up his game and do well in those states, it's just about possible that Trump won't get over the line on the first round. Now, if that happens, Trump's still very, very likely to win. And a lot of Republicans say, look, if he's just short of the line, the convention, of course, has got to give him the nomination. But there seems to be the stirrings of conspiracy inside the Republican establishment to try and somehow at the convention manipulate it so that if Trump didn't cross the line first time round, the forces would come together to deprive him of it through what's called a brokered convention. Now, the odds on that happening are low, but I think it's possible that machine might start worrying more if Trump doesn't do as well in the next few states, and in particular in California, which has a very complex primary system and where he may not do as well. So it's possible. He's still overwhelmingly the favourite, but I don't think he's across the line yet.
Yeah, well, I think the latest betting is he's at 63% favourite, which is probably about right.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. Yeah. That sounds about right to me.
I mean, I thought Cruz did very badly in the New York primary. He didn't pick, got 14% of the vote and didn't pick up a single delegate. He did get some delegates.
And it doesn't bode well for the next few primaries, which are sort of eastern seaboard, northeastern states, because Cruz partly didn't do well because he insulted New Yorkers in a few remarks before, which doesn't tend to go down well in the state that you're running in. But it's a broader problem. The social conservative vote, the Christian vote, isn't strong there. And in Democrat states, as I say, I don't think he's seen by Republican voters, even in closed primaries, as someone who's likely to be their candidate. So he's definitely in huge trouble. Yeah. He's definitely in huge trouble. And yesterday was very bad for him, you're right.
Looking at the Democrats, of course, Hillary had had a bit of a bad time in the run-up to New York. I mean, she'd lost in, six out of seven states. Yep. Do you think that New York has turned it for her?
I think Hillary was always ahead of Sanders and was pulling her back, but only pulling her back in the sense of the speed at which she would get over the finishing line. But I think in the last couple of weeks, what was interesting is, I mean, she's lost a few to him in the last few weeks, as you said, but in national polling, Sanders threatens to pull level with her amongst American voters as a whole. And I think there was an interesting moment before the New York primary this week as to whether that perception would flip enough voters for it to be very close in New York. It clearly wasn't. She did well not just amongst her sort of traditional New York voters, the minority African Americans and sort of New York City residents, but she seems to have neutralized his vote a bit in his heartland, upstate, less well-off white voters in upstate New York. So it feels to me that she's assembling a sort of coalition in New York of a sort that looks like it's pretty strong across the country now. And if you look at, I think Sanders needs something like 64% of remaining delegates to win. It's very difficult to see where he's going to get 64% in any state. He does very well in caucuses as opposed to primaries. There's only one caucus left. Yep. It doesn't feel to me that Sanders has got anywhere near the numbers to get over the line. And yet, the last 2 weeks have sort of belonged to him in a strange way because he's sort of jumped across from being a minority interest to someone who can obviously appeal more broadly. I apparently, even in polling, suggests that in a head-to-head with Donald Trump, his margin of victory would be bigger at the moment in polling than Hillary Clinton's would. So he's had a very successful 2 weeks, but New York, I think, has eliminated any chance that he'll do better than be an extraordinarily impressive second place, which is what I think he is.
Yeah. Of course, the crazy thing, of course, he's not a Democrat.
As Trump isn't a Republican.
Yeah, indeed.
No, I think the extraordinary thing about the Republican race is the man who probably is going to win it. The extraordinary thing about the Democrat race is the non-Democrat who's going to come second. Mm-hmm. But they are both extraordinary phenomena that will dominate, will be the subjects of many a book and thesis in the future.
The thing I find most interesting as well is that you could have if it's Hillary against Trump, you could have two really quite old people standing against each other. When you watch both of them, 69 or 68 or 69. So I think the vice presidential choices could actually be quite significant.
Yes. There's a lot of rumor milling going on in the American press today about whether Trump signals that Kasich is perhaps his vice president early in some way, although that would look presumptuous in many ways, but as a way of trying to get Kasich's people on board. But I agree, it's an interesting thing about the sort of return of older candidates. Of course, we had it with Jeremy Corbyn in the UK as well, and older candidates who are capable, like Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn, with some sections of the left's electorate, galvanizing younger people who perhaps were fed up with party politics before. So it's an extraordinary phenomenon, I agree.
Well, thank you, Stuart. Thank you very much.
Mike.
And thank you, everybody. That is the end of the show for this week.